This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Phil Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams, and you're listening to the
Humanist Network
Humanist
News.
Network
Humanist
News.
Network Humanist News. Network News.
It's March 24th, and you're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the American Humanist Association. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Jenda Huang.
We are once again podcasting live, although not from the Stephen Ewell Imagine No Superstition studio,
but instead from Washington, D.C. and Albany, New York.
That's right, Jenda. You and I had the opportunity to travel this month to Teaneck, New Jersey, where we were invited to take part of the platform held by the Ethical Culture Society of Bergen County.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I've personally always been kind of fascinated with ethical culture and the fact, you know, that they kind of meet in this congregational form. So when they approached us about coming and being the platform speakers, you know, they have weekly platform meetings here at the Ethical Culture Society in Bergen County. So I thought it was a good chance to kind of go there and for me personally, you know, in addition to taping the podcast, but for me personally to kind of see what goes on with an ethical culture society and really be able to speak to some of the people there and have a dialogue, which is what I thought we were able to do. But it's interesting. They've been around since 1953, and you know, in addition to their weekly platform meetings, I think, you know, they have a Sunday school that goes on for kids to do like religious education. They have adult education. They do things like the Socrates Cafe. They also do just kind of general events within the charitable works within the community, and I mean kind of social events within specifically their ethical culture society for members to get to know each other
and they also perform humanist ceremonies.
Exactly. Yeah. Weddings and funerals and kind of everything. So they basically, you know, a lot of them consider themselves a religion and that they have religious beliefs and that their society basically functions, you know, even though they don't call it a church, you know, they just call it an ethical culture society, but it functions in many ways like a church, even though their beliefs are still, you know, humanists, atheists, and, you know, there's no God in any of their beliefs.
Right.
There's no spirituality.
Right. There's nothing supernatural.
Exactly. Exactly. Nothing supernatural, but they keep that very humanist core, but they still do a lot of the same things in a functional sense. That's like a church. Just as a quick note, the weekend that we went up to Teaneck was also the weekend of the heavy rainstorms hitting New Jersey and New York State and all that. So there's actually no power at the Ethical Culture Society the morning that we arrived there. We weren't even sure if the podcast was going to happen, but we made the decision to go ahead with it. But unfortunately, Jess was stuck in traffic at that time trying to frantically get down to Jersey to meet us and to get going. So for the majority of the podcasts or of that platform, actually, it's mainly going to be me because Jess wasn't able to make it until near the end.
All right. Well, without further ado, let's play the clip from our platform with the Ethical Culture Society of Bergen County.
My name is Jenda Huang, and I am the programs manager at the American Humanist Association, and I'm also co-host of their podcast, which is why I have this microphone. The way that hopefully this platform is going to work is I was going to first do a short interview with Peter Kelly and talk with him and get some, I guess, more background and more information about the Ethical Culture Society here and maybe ethical culture in general, because, you know, a lot of the listeners who listen to our podcast are either members of the American Humanist Association or just kind of people who find our podcast for one reason or another interesting. And I think it's just interesting because within our movement and definitely outside of our movement, there's not a lot of understanding or knowledge about ethical culture and what it is and what it really means. For me, I've never needed religion, so it's interesting. I've never needed any aspect of religion. So it's always interesting to see that there are people who do identify as non-theistic, as atheist, as humanist, as free thinker, as ethical culture, as whatever you want to call yourself, and that you still have that kind of desire and that need and that want to meet in this kind of setting. Because I think it's a very, for many people in our movement, I think it's a very, very foreign concept. So hopefully the way this is going to work, I'll talk with Peter for a little bit, and then I had some questions that I was hoping to open up to the entire congregation. And yeah, I just wanted to thank everyone for coming and being here. I know the weather is a little crazy and all that. So, but I think for now, I'll just start by bringing Peter up.
For those of you in the audience that don't know me, my name is Peter Kelly. I've been a member here for a little more than 20 years, and I have been president of the society in the past and actively involved. So it's great to see all of you here this morning. And I just wanted to respond a little bit to what was said already, and maybe kind of, I was thinking, coming over here this morning, what's a shorthand way of introducing ethical culture to new people and maybe to some of you that have been coming for a while as well? And I think that a lot of people have heard the phrase, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. And that can mean a lot of different things. But I think that we sort of identify with people that say, I'm not comfortable with conventional religion, but I think that I can be spiritual in myself, whether that means connecting to something within myself or within nature or within other people. And so I think that's a common concept. But I'd like to introduce or to suggest that at Ethical Culture, we can be religious without being spiritual. And that for us, for me, that what that means is that I can find something about the value of a religious organization in behaving what I would call religiously, but I don't necessarily need to believe in God, or I don't necessarily need to believe in something of a transcendent nature in order to be religious in that way, in what I think of as the positive aspect of an organized religion. And so we have a congregational organization. Our society, as we call it in Bergen County, has been around since 1953. We have a professional, full-time religious leader that we call a leader. He is a clergy person, Joe Schumann, and he has been the leader of our society since 1974. And Ethical Culture as a movement originated in New York City in 1876, and was founded by Felix Adler, who was trained as a Jewish in the Jewish tradition and had trained to be a rabbi, but found himself interested in a different direction and started the movement then.
I think one of the biggest issues that people always have with ethical culture is the idea of calling yourself a religion. And because I think for most people in society, and definitely people within our movement, there's that kind of baggage that comes with religion of it being always tied to a theistic belief, always tied to the idea of a God, that you can't really separate that from religion. And I mean, even the modern day humanist movement basically came out of Unitarian Universalism. Mm-hmm. And if you look back to the first Humanist Manifesto, which was released in 1933, it talks about calling for a religious humanism. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I guess over time, over the 80 years or so since that document was first released, our ideas about what is religion and what isn't religion and where we fall into it seems to have kind of changed. And I mean, some would say evolved, that they moved away from the idea of a religious humanism to just humanism. Like the AHA's, our organization's current position is we're humanism unmodified. So we're not religious humanists or secular humanists or scientific humanists, we're just humanists. But it seems Ethical Culture, and I guess, I don't know, is it a critique, but I still see it that when Felix Adler first kind of came up with Ethical Culture so long ago in the past, it made sense in that time to say we're still a religion, because the idea of being without a God or gods, especially back then, was such a radical idea. But I mean, as time has gone on, it's not like we're exactly fully accepted in society, or everyone's running for Congress or whatever. But there's still all these kind of issues where people are like, oh, you're an atheist, or you don't believe in God, you don't go to church. But that acceptance is growing. So the issue is why still hold on to that idea of religion, especially when, yeah, I'd say most everyone in society always sees it as being related to a theistic belief. Like, is there another term or a better term?
One thing I would like to just I don't know, to clarify, is that ethical culture, we believe that you can join our society, you can align yourself with our aims, and you still can believe in God if you want to. So we are not an atheist organization explicitly. We are a non-theistic organization in that we believe that people here can be good people, can be ethical people without a belief in God, but we don't actually say you need to be an atheist to be a member here. We just say if you're interested in spending time glorifying a deity and thinking about what a deity wants to do for you, then this probably isn't the place for you because we don't spend time doing that. But if you want to believe in God, we're not going to challenge that belief. And so that is something where we feel like we can be an inclusive, tolerant, and respectful organization of other religions. So that's one thing. The other thing is that as humanists, people have a fundamental faith in people, and they have a respect for the worth and dignity of other people. And part of that belief, for me at least, brings with it an obligation to other people and a responsibility to make the world better. And the way to do that is in community, in organization with other people. And so that I think that part of what we feel, why we gather together in societies and come together on weekly congregational meetings that we call platforms, are to support. We do that to support each other in that greater good. And while we don't necessarily need a God to tell us how to do that, or to tell us that if we don't do that, we will be punished, we do feel that we need each other to do that. And so that just, you know, being a member of AHA is a useful thing, but we, you know, for many people that are members here, I feel like that they sense a greater need to get together and do something.
I mean, why do you have to call it a religion, though? Why can't you have this sense of community, right, and coming together and everything like that? But why still tie that to a term that has, I guess, all sorts of associations,
sure,
with it?
Well, one thing is, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. I mean, we have Sunday school. I mean, I came from a religious background when I was growing up, and I like to joke about the fact that when I first came to ethical culture, I felt very uncomfortable thinking of it as a religion. You know, there was no liturgy. There were, you know, despite the fact that there was music, there weren't hymns. We didn't have prayers. And then I like to joke about the fact that then something happened that made me realize we were a religion, and that was that we took up a collection at the end of the meeting. I do think that there is a value to considering ourselves a religion just because of those associations. And because by challenging some of the assumptions that people have that come with those associations, we can actually challenge society. So that, like, when I first was a member and I would go to work and I would talk about ethical culture, I would be uncomfortable telling people about my religious life, my ethical life. And then I started getting more comfortable about it. I was like, okay, well, if let them be uncomfortable with me, I can say my kids go to Sunday school. You know, like it was very, at first it's very difficult because we don't have a good word for this building that comes with it. We don't call it a church. We don't call it a temple. We don't call it a synagogue. We call it a meeting house. And that's kind of weird for most people to hear that. But when you're talking about what you do on a Sunday morning at Ethical Culture, if you say we have a Sunday school, everybody goes, oh, I got that. I understand what that is. And that is a big part of what we do, because the ethical life, the ethical development of our children is a really important part of what we do. And so calling it a religion, having a Sunday school, that's an important part of what we do, because it does come with it some of those associations, but it also helps challenge those associations.
Okay, I definitely want to go back to some of this, but I was also curious, and if anyone in the crowd is this, please, you know, raise your hand and speak up, and we'd love to get you involved. I mean, are there a lot of people who are part of ethical culture societies that do believe in a theistic God?
By our nature, we really value the respect of who are other people. And so that we're trying within our societies not to be militantly atheistic. Like, we don't say, oh, you will be uncomfortable here if you believe in God. There aren't a lot of people, but there are some that actually belong to other religious groups and attend other, you know, churches. And so that's really kind of cool for us. For me, I think that's like a great thing that they can find some value, you know, within a different context and as well as this context.
So then what do you teach at Sunday school?
We teach a lot of, I mean, our Sunday school ranges from toddlers and basically, you know, babysitting through junior high school. And then there is a youth group that that we have for teenagers after they graduate from the Sunday school. And so we try to be age appropriate, obviously, but what we're doing is teaching those ethical values of respect for other people, the dignity of people, self-esteem. We do teach a little bit of comparative religions. We talk about how to tease out the humanism in other religions. So we talk, when we talk about comparative religion, we actually talk about how to respect another religion because it has some of the same core values that we espouse. So we try not to say, oh, those other religions are stupid and we're right. And that's a really important thing for us, I think. We also, interestingly, at the older age groups, we have courses in human sexuality where we try to teach, adolescents respect for each other and for, things like respect for gender and sexual orientation choices and things like that, that I think is really important and is so lacking in other organized contexts. I mean, it's very difficult to fight homophobia as just a family. You need to have peer groups and you need to talk about that. And then we do have, as part of our Sunday school experience, when a kid gets into seventh or eighth grade, they graduate from the Sunday school and they go through a year where they have an adult mentor who helps them sort of come work through some of their own ideas of what are their core values, what are their ethics. And then they do a project that they present to the adult congregation on a Sunday morning as part of the graduation ceremony. And that might take the form of just an address about a philosophical or theological issue or something, or a social action issue. Or it could be that they've actually gone out into the community and taken some community action and they are presenting what they've done. Or it could be, we've had people that do dance presentations and things like that. So that's an important thing for the development of our children and a way that our congregation can connect to them.
I think, yeah, definitely I want to come back to some more community stuff. But speaking about kind of the philosophy of ethical culture, in terms of maybe critiquing and offending religious people. Mm-hmm. So, especially in these last few years with all the books by the Four Horsemen, Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, Sam Harris, and Christopher Hitchens, and people like P.Z. Myers, who's a University of Minnesota professor at Morris and whatnot, and, the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Reason and Science, there's kind of this increased kind of attack, I guess, or willingness to be bold and blunt in the critique of religion. And my question isn't so much related to that, but what's wrong with maybe ridiculing or poking fun of religious people a little bit in some ways? Because I would say, from our point of view, I'm not so much speaking as our organization, because as an organization, the AHA works with religious people and tries to stay respectful. But I guess personally, because, for example, for me, I just realized growing up, I never believed in a God. I could never wrap my head around the idea that there was any kind of theistic belief. I was still raised Roman Catholic and I did like the whole nine yards and everything like that. But I mean, as I grew older and as I've done more reading and more thinking, it just seems so amazingly impossible. Not, there very well could be a God, but it just seems like such a difficult concept that there is. And I mean, maybe not talking so much about, I'm not, you know, not saying that, you know, you should offend like the method, sure. you know, the sure. mainline Christian down the street. But I think there's a lot more extreme examples of Christians, you know, faith healers or even Pentecostals or people who are a lot more extreme. And I mean, the idea of going against them full tilt and kind of a no holds barred thing. I mean, what's the issue with that?
Obviously, we cannot on some level, like, know whether there's a God or not. I mean, there's like, you know, by its definition, something that is transcendent is unknowable. But what I would say is that my relationship or my conception or my opinion of your God comes from how your belief in that God makes you behave in this world, right? So, like, to me, that is the concrete extension of your belief. I can't know your faith, I can't know your belief, but I can know what you do. And if your God tells you to kill people, disrespect women, you know, whatever, then I can have in my own good faith, I can have a critique of that. Like, I can't say your God is wrong, but I can say your behavior is unethical, it is disrespectful, it is bad for people. And so I can't advance the respect that I have for other people by simply categorically disrespecting your opinions, your beliefs, and your faiths. But I can be absolute about your behavior. And that, I think, is one thing that, like, you know, secular humanists get a bad rap from the conservatives and, you know, family values folks, because they say, well, you have no absolutes, you have no faiths, you have no core values, you're just a relativist. Whatever you do is okay. You know, you think anything is okay depending on the circumstances. And I think that at ethical culture, we don't believe that. I mean, we really believe that you can say, it's not do your own thing, it is do the right thing. And if your belief in Allah makes you do the right thing, I respect that. If your belief in, you know, in a Christian deity makes you do the right thing, I respect that. I don't disrespect your belief in a Christian God or a Muslim God if you are being a respectful, you know, ethical person. And so like, I don't see the value in categorically critiquing faith just because I don't have it and I can't, and my rationality can't fathom it. So I think that on a rational level, I can advance an ethical agenda by being respectful. And if I, but at the same time, I would vehemently advocate against those kinds of religions or those parts of religions that advance, you know, a destructive agenda.
Are there people here who actually specifically identify as atheists and are comfortable as doing so? Or are there certain congregations that are more atheistic than others? Are there ones that are more comfortable with religiosity? I mean,
I don't know, Ken, maybe you can speak to the question of other societies a little bit.
Okay. I don't know other societies all that well either. I spend most of my time here. I've met plenty of folks from other societies, but I haven't gone to their platforms or what have you. But I mentioned the Washington Society because they went through an interesting period. They're still in an interesting period right now. Washington Society is a fairly large chapter, I think, probably larger than this one, I would guess. And they recently have embarked on, I guess it would be called joint affiliation, where they are also a chapter in the Unitarian Universalist Church. So they're actually a chapter of both ethical culture. And I believe that the reason they evolved in that direction is because, to address your question, they have a lot of members who are probably more spiritual on average than the people that we have here in that sort of otherworldly transcendent sense. Now, I've never been there. My impression is that if you went there, and I've spent some time with one of the leaders in that society who is herself ordained as a universalist as well as certified as an ethical culture leader. And from what she has described to me, if you went there for a platform, you would not feel like you're in church. They do not pray. The way she put it was, you feel like you're in an ethical culture society. Yet there was a strong enough element of this, I'll call it a spiritual upwelling. And they also actually had a more practical reason that they wanted to affiliate with the Universalist. And it all came down to some degree to money, because they had invested in a very large building. I understand it's a very nice facility. Yeah. And they really needed to bring in more members. So they were pushing the envelope in our world to try to expand. But it was a point of discomfort for a number of old-style ethical culturists, but it was a point of greater comfort for a number of the congregation. And so that's where they are. They're actually jointly affiliated.
Yeah, did you have a question? Yeah.
Just before I leave, maybe to leave it as a thought for other discussion, I have a blended family. And so you talked about, a belief in God. So I think my two older children come from a Baptist background. And coming to ethical, they see a commonality with the behavior that is espoused in the Baptist religion. So in terms of doing right with others, in terms of respect for others, a respect for yourself, and that. My daughter just recently had said to me, I'm trying to figure it out if I believe in God or not. And she said, well, what do you think about it? And I said to her, well, that's your choice. And it's something that you'll figure out, and I'll help you to figure that out. And she's like, well, maybe I should, I'll check out like a church, something like that. And I was like, well, you can go to grandma's and see like a Pentecostal church and see how that works out. So I think there's, just like adults do, I would imagine that children struggle with sort of that concept. And within the society, you have that open forum to do so without being judged if you are you have a belief in God or you have this spirituality piece. And so I think there are folks within here, and they might be younger folks, it might be some adult folks. I recently myself, had just talked to my wife about that as well. I was like, well, grew up being Pentecostal, and I just until very recently, thought, well, there's something else out there. Now I'm like, maybe not. So it's a constant for me. I wouldn't say a struggle, but it's a process, and this form allows that process to happen in a very free way without judgment, and you can exercise it if you want or not to. Today or tomorrow.
Thank you so much. This is Peter Kelly again. I just wanted to also underscore that thought about blended families, because I think that's one of the unique attractions of ethical culture, is that we can appeal to parents from different backgrounds. And in my case, I grew up as a Presbyterian my father was a minister. We were really, I went to Sunday school, I went to church, it was a big deal. My brother is a minister. I married a woman who came from a Jewish background, for whom, and it was less about Protestant versus Jewish, but it was more about, like, I thought there was some value in my experience, and Tracy, my wife, didn't have a religious, there wasn't a value in her childhood from religion. And so when we were thinking of kids and we had kids, it was like, I was the one saying, like, let's think about something for religion. And she was like, well, do we really need to? I hope I'm not overstating this. But at the same time, we were both uncomfortable about, the conventional religions, but at that point, at some point, I might have said, if she had said, I think it's really important for our kids to have some religion, let's take them to Hebrew school, I probably wouldn't have objected, because to me, the religious aspect of having a community was important. And so I was really happy to find ethical culture as a place that could, as Richard just said, a place where that process can occur without judgment. It's like our Sunday school kids are not told, oh, you're stupid if you believe in God, or, oh, you must believe in God. And so that's a really important thing for us, I think.
Doesn't ethical culture as a whole still, doesn't that your feeling of you have an ethical justification for what it is that you believe, doesn't that lead you to make it okay to some level to say, like, it's all right to, and I hate to use the word proselytize, but in the sense of trying to go out and saying to other people, hey, you guys actually kind of have it wrong?
I don't think that proselytizing implies telling other people that they're wrong. I mean, to my mind, what it means is telling people the value of what we have. And a lot of times I think the people that are attracted to ethical culture and the people that we would quote unquote proselytize to are people who are searching, who are not, who are feeling adrift and feel like either they're rejecting their religion of their heritage, or they, as I did, felt that there was something that they wanted to find again, but they were uncomfortable going back to the same place. And so on that level, I feel like, yes, we do feel like we have something of value to offer to other people, but we don't try to say, you need to change your mind, you need to abandon something. We need to convince you that you have some misconception. More, it's like we need to show you what we've got, and we think it's a good thing. We think it's kind of a cool thing. I mean, when my kids were growing up, because my wife comes from a Jewish background, they had cousins in the area that went to Hebrew school that were very, that were Jewish. And in the Jewish religion, because their mother is of Jewish heritage, my kids can consider themselves Jewish. And when they were growing up, that question at school was, what's your religion? More often than not, as young kids, they did not say ethical culture. They would say, well, my father came from, a Protestant background. My mother was Jewish. But I think now, as young adults, they are more likely to identify themselves as ethical culturists and to say, for them, what the word religion means or what their identification as a religion, is still probably in formation. But I think that sense of as Richard also said before, this is a place where you can figure it out, and that we don't have the answers. We have a place where you can ask your questions. I think that's a really important part of what we are, what ethical culture is.
I am a new member of Ethical Culture, and there are many, many new thoughts and many new people that I'm meeting. But what I see in regard to this question is that ethical culture does not exclude anything or anyone. It stands for what's good in every religion, every philosophy, every psychology. I can't see that any rational person could deny anything that ethical stands for, whereas religions are basically excluding. So I see this as a place of including rather than excluding, minus the concept of some gatekeeper. And who or what that gatekeeper is or exists is irrelevant to what is moral and ethical and decent and respectful. I happen to agree with everything said and all of the things that ethical stand for, but I'm one of those people who would consider myself spiritual but not religious. And by that, I don't mean spiritual, there's a God for me. By that, I mean I continue to live. That's it. That is the only thing that basically is a little different than most of the people I meet. But on the concept of what ethical stands for, how could somebody not agree with it?
From what I've heard so far, this is a place where people can sort of figure out which path they want to take as far as being secular, being religious, or being a member of the ethical culture. Is there a process or a text or something that you guys use to help facilitate that process for people when they're here, aside from, the panels and the speakers and events that you guys already hold? Is there something that's more tangible that you do to help people
as a way if they are trying to decide if
yep.
they want to join or not?
Yep.
We don't have texts. We don't have liturgy. I mean, there's a lot written by ethical culture leaders. And we do have several statements about what we think our purpose is and what our core values are. And so we certainly share those with people who are interested. And, whether they resonate with them or not. The process of becoming a member is fairly, there's a low barrier to membership. I mean, we essentially expect you to have, we want you to have an understanding of what this organization's about before you make a commitment to membership. We have some people that come and they're like, this is fantastic, let me join, where do I sign? And we sort of say, like, slow down a little bit, you know, visit with us, come to our activities, see if this is the place for you. And then we have what we call an orientation session where the prospective members, people who say they are interested in membership, meet with our leader, the clergyman, Joe Schumann here, and with some other, we have a membership committee, and the chair of that committee meets with the people and sort of then, you know, tries to probe a little more deeply, what are your personal agendas and why, what are your motivations? And, you know, if they feel that they may be in misunderstanding with our actual aims, we'll try to gently say, well, you know, maybe you should keep visiting us. That doesn't happen very often. But usually, you know, we explain who we are and what we are on a more personal level. And then if the person says, I would like to, yes, you know, I do want to join, that's really all they have to do. I mean, we are an organization that, you know, has a building, has employees. So we do, this was something that was hotly debated. We do rely on our members' pledges. And we did a number of years ago debate the question of whether we expected a minimum pledge from people or not. You know, these kinds of things are, for organizations like ours, they're very deeply debated. They're strongly felt. We did come down on the side of expecting a pledge from everyone, but excusing people who had financial hardship, and all they have to do to be excused is to tell the finance person that they can't afford it. So we're not really that, you know, it's not that tough to be a member if you want to join.
All right, folks, I'm told that we're going to wrap it up. Does anyone have any questions that we want to end with?
I'll just quickly say that I did hear Joe Schumann give an answer to the question you had about what authoritative texts we have. And we do have classical philosophical ethical theory that moves our leaders to give their platforms. And we hear that Sunday after Sunday. And I didn't expect to need ethical culture, but when I brought my kids and I became involved through them, I find now that even though I'm very actively involved as a volunteer, the community gives a lot back to me than I ever thought I would. I never pictured myself being a joiner or getting things out of a community. What would I need that for? But this community, actually, I think a lot about it. My husband and I are both very involved. And I wonder what other people talk about in the car at this point, because so much of our time is spent planning and chatting and trying to build a community. But to get back to your question about the authoritative text, what Joe said, he's, by the way, a professor of human rights at Columbia University, so he's a very authoritative, knowledgeable speaker himself. But what he says is that for us, we have no dogma that can't be questioned. So even Felix Adler, his writings, we don't have to adjust our moral intuitions if they don't meet what Felix Adler said. We can question him. Unlike traditional religions where this is the authoritative text, if you have a disagreement about it, you have to figure out why you're wrong.
You know, we spent a lot of time, you all spent a lot of time talking about this concept of whether we're a religion or not. And I'm one of those members here who doesn't really see it as a religion. I see it as a way of being connected to a community of like-minded people who care about community, who care about human beings, who care about the values of being the best they can be, to continue to work on that on a regular basis, and to you know, focus in on helping others be the best that they can be. I'm so glad that my first instinct was to send my daughters to a Hebrew school, you know, to know my heritage. I'm so glad I didn't do that, because I think the major difference here is that, from my point of view, religions undercut your critical thinking skills. And here we are helping to strengthen that, so that our children are learning to think, and the other children, from my personal opinion, are learning to not think. And I think that's the big difference. Thanks.
Okay. I think at that note, I think we're going to have to wrap it up.
That was a clip from our platform hosted by the Ethical Culture Society of Bergen County on March 14th. Jenda, I don't know about you, but I think that they're certainly on to something there with creating a community for their members for just for, you know, learning how to raise your children, teaching morals and ethics and values, and providing a nice safe space, as we heard some of the members talking toward the end there, for people to sort of feel free to sort of decide which way they want to go, if they want to live with some supernatural or spiritual values, or if they want to be strictly sort of scientific and reason-based, and providing support for that to happen. I don't think that you see that very often in the humanist or non-religious movement. So I think that that's great that they provide that.
Yeah, I think they're a really interesting phenomena, because, you know, they've been around longer than the modern humanist movement has, and their thoughts, I think, kind of the ideology of ethical culture and whatnot has done a lot to influence. But I think, yeah, it was interesting to hear from a lot of their members directly to see, like, you know, I mean, I think as we heard from that clip, you know, some people consider it a religion and other people don't, but they're still all unified with that, kind of with that sense of community and the idea of wanting to find like-minded people and just being able to kind of be together in that community. And it's always interesting, because I don't know if it's their official slogan or if it's their unofficial slogan, but it's deeds before creed. Mm-hmm. I believe. So, you know, they're very much focused, as was discussed, that they're just not that interested in that question of God, of whether there's a supernatural or whatnot. And they just want to work together with whoever kind of shares those same values and are willing to really, really do good in the world, which I think is interesting, because I can appreciate that on some level. But for me personally, it also seems to me that it's not important just what you do, but, and this is, you know, it's perhaps a small trifling point, but it is important for me why you think what you think in terms of what you're doing. Because I feel like sometimes with some actions there can still be, you can still do something for the right reasons, but the reasoning, the actual reason, or, you know, you can still do something that's good and positive, but the reason behind that is still flawed and faulty, and there's still kind of that issue with why are you thinking that. But
sure,
that could just be me.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, it's you know, if I were married, I would not cheat on my spouse because, you know, it's illegal, or because it's, you know, a sin. I would not cheat on my spouse because it's the right thing to do, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's the moral and ethical thing to do. Or, you know, we don't kill people because we need people and it's not right, and we value communities and we need to be self-sustaining and helpful because that's what it takes for us to, as a race, to last.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting to kind of see their point of view. But yeah, I've always, like I said at the start, I've always had this fascination with ethical culture ever since I first learned about them, when I first got involved with the movement, you know. Because, and, you know, there have been other attempts throughout time, things like the, you know, like the North Texas Church of Freethought and whatnot, that, you know, they're all atheists and humanists and free thinkers, but they're still meeting within a congregational setting, which kind of brings up that interesting point, which is kind of a big bone of contention with, you know, with like the new atheists and whatnot. Like, is there, with this idea of a congregational model, with like a social model of people, you know, is there anything good that we as humanists, as free thinkers and atheists, that we can learn from a church model? You know, because a lot of the stuff with meeting in a congregation and having someone talk once a week and, you know, doing good deeds and stuff, that's definitely something that's not inherent to religion. That's something, you know, it's not something that religion can only do. It's just over the course of thousands of years we've only associated that with religion. But, you know, why can't, you know, is it possible for humanists and free thinkers to have something along those lines to meet the needs of those people who want it? Because, you know, there's definitely plenty of atheists out there who, you know, have no interest in that kind of setting. But for those who do, you know, it seems like there's some kind of tension with trying to create a model like that works, that's still reminiscent enough of religion in some ways to maybe give some sort of emotional comfort to people, but still separate enough to be like, to really represent what we as humanists and free thinkers think.
Sure, sure. Whether it's because you get to then bring your children, and your children are being entertained and taught something while you can spend, you know, an hour and a half to yourself to listen to something that's inspiring to you. you know, that's, I think that's part of it for some people. I know some of my friends go to church because they're like, I need the hour to sit and to reconnect to myself. I mean, also probably to listen to whatever, you know, whoever's leading the sermon is saying, but also it's just a time to sort of be.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So yeah, I'd be interested to hear what listeners who heard this podcast may have to say or think about this, especially if, you know, you've been involved in ethical culture society in the past or currently are, or, you know, maybe consider it for the future. You know, what do you think about the idea of meeting in a congregational format? Like, does that really make sense for us as humanists? Is there anything at all redeeming from a church model that we can take from, or is it all something we just need to totally kind of throw out and come up with a new structure?
So listeners, we'd love to hear what you think about this. If you want to contact us, you've got two different options. One is you can send an email to hnn@americanhumanist.org. You can also use the contact form on our podcast page at americanhumanist.org/hnn/podcast. There's a link right to the right there that says letter to producer.
Yeah, and while you're on the podcast page, you can also kind of scroll down a little bit and see and listen to all of our archives of all our previous episodes and read all the show notes from those previous episodes. And then, of course, you know, don't forget, for the weeks where there is no podcast, you can always read the Humanist Network News e-zine, which is at americanhumanist.org/hnn.
Well, Jenna, that about wraps up our show for this month. Why don't you tell the listeners some exciting things that we have on the American Humanist Association horizon?
Yes, we are talking about Humanism 2.0, which is going to be the AHA's 69th annual conference, which is taking place this year, June 4th through 6th in San Jose, California. Registration is open. You can go to americanhumanist.org/conference. And there, you know, you can kind of register and see the list of awardees, the entertainment, and, you know, the list of speakers and the schedule for what's going to be going on. You know, as it is every year, I've gone to the AHA conferences many years in the past, and it's always a good time. There's always interesting and dynamic speakers. And it's also a great time to meet humanists from, you know, around the country and see how humanism is growing and evolving in different parts. Not only just in the US, but all over the world too. We're sometimes, you know, definitely get some international humanists coming for a visit.
Nice. I have to say, I'm really excited this year to, I'm hoping, I got my fingers crossed to interview Bill Nye, the science guy, who's this year's Humanist of the Year, right?
Yes. That should be a good opportunity.
Definitely. And for those of you longtime HNN listeners, you'll also get the chance to see Mr. Deity perform. Those of you who haven't heard the episode, that's HNN episode number 16. Download that, listen to that. You'll hear about Mr. Deity. It's a YouTube, well, it started as a YouTube phenomenon, but it's hilarious. It's amazing. Listen to it. Register for the conference. It's going to be awesome.
Yep. americanhumanist.org/conference.
And last but not least, folks, mark your calendars. May 6th, 2010. That is the National Day of Reason this year. So we would love to hear if your local association or group is planning an event. Register that on our website, nationaldayofreason.org.
All right. I think that about wraps it up for this month, eh, Jess?
Absolutely. Thanks for listening to the Humanist Network News. I'm your host, Jess Constantine.
And I'm your host, Jenda Huang.